A couple weeks ago, Ferrari announced that it would stop developing this season's car after the first 3 to 4 races, was the specific quote. I have really mixed feelings about this. You know, on the one hand, you've got a budget cap and you're trying to simultaneously develop 2 cars. So why spend too many of your resources on this year's car if there's no way you're going to beat Red Bull and Mercedes? On the other hand, if you stop developing the car too soon, you could quite realistically drop down to 6th place again if some of the teams that are further back in the field don't stop developing their cars. What's your take on that?
My take is that the top management at Ferrari, and I'm talking about the Agnelli family, have become rather impatient. And I think they've told the team that the sort of nonsense that was going on last year and that miserable performance is simply not acceptable. So I think they've all been told to pull their socks up or else. And it looks to me as though they have pulled the socks up.
Welcome to the Forza F1 podcast. I'm Aaron Jenkins, the editor of Forza Magazine, and with me, as always, is Andrew Frankel, Forza's Formula One editor. The 2021 F1 season was widely expected to look much the same as 2020. This year's cars are very similar to last year's, with the teams having to reuse last year's chassis and having only 2 development tokens which allow them to make major changes. In Ferrari's case, the team used its tokens to redesign the rear suspension and gearbox, although they also created an all-new power unit to overcome the significant power disadvantage of last season. The other significant rules changes were the introduction of a budget cap for the first time ever and new restrictions aimed at reducing downforce, but neither of these was expected to really shake things up this season. Instead, for my part at least, I was more interested in the driver's side of things, with the return of 2-time champion Fernando Alonso to Alpine, the renamed Renault team, and the signing of 4-time champion Sebastian Vettel at Aston Martin, which last year was Racing Point. Which, when you add in Lewis Hamilton and Kimi Raikkonen, means we have 14 world championships on the grid this year, and a full half the grid has won a Grand Prix, making this one of the strongest driver lineups in decades, probably. That said, it was clear it was not business as usual when preseason tested starting in Bahrain last month. Mercedes, which has won every world championship since 2014, suffered mechanical issues and driver errors and completed the fewest number of laps of any team. Ferrari newcomer Carlos Sainz Jr. set the 3rd fastest time on the final day of testing, to the delight of the Devosi, but all 3 days were topped by Red Bull's Max Verstappen. Mercedes looked more like its old self in practice in Bahrain and appeared to be almost back entirely on form in qualifying, except when Verstappen took pole by an impressive 0.4 of a second. Given the past 7 seasons, Andrew, this sort of felt like the end of an era before the race had even begun, and the answer to a lot of people's prayers that Mercedes wouldn't simply walk away with, Hamilton's 8th championship and Mercedes, I guess its 7th consecutive title to its name. But after the race, Lewis Hamilton stood on top of the podium ahead of Verstappen with his Mercedes teammate Valtteri Bottas in 3rd place. That said, the race wasn't business as usual.
No, it certainly wasn't. For a start, we had Verstappen going off into the distance, well, within reason. And it was clear that Team Mercedes had a fight on their hands. I'll be totally honest, I was desperately hoping that Verstappen would win because it would have been very, very good for the championship. But having lost by 0.7 of a second, I would say that it was a little bit of a moral victory. And if this is a shape of things to come, I actually believe that 21 is going to be an absolute cracker of a season. I'm expecting some changes. If a couple of drivers, former champions like Alonso and Vettel, don't get their act together, I can't have a feeling that one or both of them may not see the season out in a Formula One car. There were lots of things to love. I adored the fact that Yuki Tsunoda, first time in the car, first time in Formula One, should get 2 points in ninth place. I think that was tremendous. I thought Lando Norris drove brilliantly into fourth, clearly showing new hot teammate Ricardo that he's not going to just roll over. I thought he drove a tremendous race. Bottas, if I might say, was his usual disappointing self. Nothing new there.
In Bottas's defense, he did have a 10.5 second pit stop due to no fault of his own. And prior to that, he was admittedly in third place, but holding pace with Verstappen as Verstappen closed in on Hamilton, as I recall.
Yes, this is perfectly true. But you look at Bottas, and the great respect, he looks like a broken man to me. He looks like someone who knows that his days are numbered within the Mercedes-Benz team. I could be wrong, but that's the impression I get. And having talked to Russell during the off-season, if you like, I honestly think he's just a phone call away from jumping in there, unless, of course, and you know they have super sub Hülkenberg. Nico has been signed up to Mercedes-Benz. Should anything go wrong with either of the drivers, which is exciting because he's over 30, and of course he's been super subbed a couple of times. I'm a huge fan of his. I just think it's going to be, I can feel it, that because Lewis didn't totally dominate and virtually lap the entire field, he will not be lapping Verstappen and Checo Perez, whose car broke down and he came back from absolute dead last to finish sixth, shows that A, he's a very good driver, and B, that the Red Bull is very good indeed. So I think we're going to have a fab season.
Yeah, I agree with almost everything you said. Clearly not 100% on Bottas there. And furthermore, I think that Mercedes sort of used him as a pawn to try to keep Lewis ahead of Verstappen as well. So even in the very first race, he's being treated as a number two driver, which certainly can't be improving his self-regard. But I think the thing that was most remarkable about this race was, as you said, we actually had a race, we had a competition to see who would win the race itself. Because most of last season, for instance, we were talking about who do we think can finish on the podium? Because first and usually second, we're never really in doubt. So that changes the whole perspective if it's not just going to be a Hamilton, as you say, running away with it and just winning every race. You mentioned Perez a minute ago, whose car stopped, shut off actually on the formation lap. He managed to get it going again and start from the pit lane. To date, he had been about a half second behind Verstappen, just in terms of sheer pace, much like Pierre Gasly and Alex Albon, who he was chosen over to try to close that gap. But I think you're absolutely right. In coming from behind up to fifth place, he showed that he is a step above what those two guys most likely would have done. And that's exactly what Perez is known for. He's not the guy that qualifies on pole. He's the guy that's there at the end that takes points.
Yes, I entirely agree on Perez. I should really mention the also-rans. I mean, we've been talking about the guys up at the front. I think Team Haas.
Let's hold on to that for now.
Oh, sorry.
I've got a whole sequence here.
Okay, sorry.
Did you want to say anything about Perez after that?
No. I'm ready for you to carry on.
And of course, I'm a big fan of Perez, and I was very happy to see him picked up at Red Bull. So we'll see how he develops over this season. But I think the bigger story, and the one certainly you and I were most interested in, was what is this season going to be for Ferrari? Last year, they finished sixth in the constructors' title, their worst finish in 40 years. And in preseason testing, they were, you know, sort of in the middle. Carlos Sainz sent the third fastest time on the final day of testing, which was good, but everybody was, you know, quietly optimistic. But then in qualifying, Leclerc surprised us all. Charles Leclerc surprised us all and qualified fourth, with Sainz, I believe, eighth. And then, as we saw a couple times last year, Ferrari's race pace wasn't quite there. Leclerc finished sixth. Sainz, again, stayed in eighth. But compared to sort of the disarray and the discomfort we saw last year, the team seems entirely comfortable. That was a great qualifying lap, and all throughout testing and all throughout the few things that have been said this weekend, they just seem very, very, very calm and content. And in terms of sheer pace, at this point at least, they put both cars in the top 10, and they appear to be the fourth quickest team right behind Mercedes. So that's not a bad place to be.
Well, don't forget that there is now harmony inside the team. Last year, with the sacking of Vettel, clearly there was a certain amount of animosity and ill feeling and so on and so forth. These two guys actually get on terribly well with each other. And now that there is harmony and there is friendly rivalry, but nobody's leaving at the end of the season, I think that they will pick up the occasional podium, because let's face it, 22 races, things do happen. Drivers do collide. They do drop out. And just like last year, I can see one or both of them getting to third. I'll be honest, I cannot see either of them winning a race in 2021.
No, and Ferrari itself certainly doesn't appear to have any hopes in that direction. But there's another thing that plays into it, which is that a couple weeks ago, Ferrari announced that it would stop developing this season's car after the first 3 to 4 races, was the specific quote. And as I wrote in my editorial in the most recent issue of Forza, or it's the most recent for me anyway, because it just went to the printers last week, I have really mixed feelings about this. You know, on the one hand, you've got a budget cap and you're trying to simultaneously develop two cars. So why spend too many of your resources on this year's car if there's no way you're going to beat Red Bull and Mercedes? On the other hand, if you stop developing the car too soon, you could quite realistically drop down to sixth place again if some of the teams that are further back in the field don't stop developing their cars. What's your take on that?
My take is that the top management at Ferrari, and I'm talking about the Agnelli family, have become rather impatient. And I think they've told the team that the sort of nonsense that was going on last year and that miserable performance is simply not acceptable. So I think they've all been told to pull their socks up or else. And it looks to me as though they have pulled the socks up. The two drivers certainly drove as well as possible, as cleanly as possible, even though there was a beautiful little ding-dong between Leclerc and Lando Norris. It was clean. I'm hopeful, as I say, I'm hopeful for the odd podium. That is as far as I would go.
The 7,000-plus members of the Ferrari Club of America, the world's largest Ferrari club, enjoy exciting track events, an internationally recognized concours d'elegance, and a wide variety of year-round social activities. The members of our 16 active regions and 52 chapters throughout the US and Canada also receive our monthly news bulletin, plus Prancing Horse, our full-color quarterly magazine. Our tremendous program of membership benefits even includes discounts at authorized Ferrari dealerships and selected retailers. So join today. Visit us online now at FerrariClubOfAmerica.org.
So we've already talked about McLaren a little bit, which appears it finished third last year, and it's currently, after this one race, third again. And you also mentioned that Norris, who's been there for 2 years and was, I think, was definitely beaten most of the time by Carlos Sainz next year, looked to be facing a much tougher challenge in the form of Daniel Ricciardo this year. And Norris was faster during testing, I believe, and was faster throughout qualifying until the final session when he was only 0.05 behind. But as you mentioned, he beat Ricciardo today, finishing fourth to the Australians' seventh, I believe. It is, of course, very early days, the very first race. And this is a great feather in Lando's cap. But do you think he'll be able to hold his own against Ricciardo when Daniel's only had essentially 4 days in the car and he's very, very, very close to him?
Well, Ricciardo, I think, will pull it out of the bag at circuits such as Monaco. Not only does he live there, but he's a former winner. And I think it's one of those where, if you like, local knowledge will be very much in his favor. The fact that that McLaren is now full of money, lots and lots and lots of sponsors have joined the team because Zak Brown is brilliant at finding sponsors. And then there are other people, again, you'll read about it in the next issue of Forza, who just very, very wealthy people who wanted to be part of the team. And they've been throwing money at it. And of course, Formula One is, whether we like it or not, is a rich man's game. And having lots of money and not having to worry about replacing parts or whatever is very much in McLaren's favor. I do see them finishing third in 2021.
Which is where they finished last year after finishing, if I recall correctly, sixth in 2018 and fourth in 2019. Going back real quick, I'll make a prediction that's opposite yours. I think Ricciardo is going to steamroll Norris as soon as he gets his feet under them. So I give Norris three more races, let's say, before he's consistently behind. And speaking of steamrolling, Fernando Alonso, of course, returned to Alpine, which used to be Renault, the team that he won the championship in 2005 and 6 with, and steamrolled his teammate, Esteban Ocon, who is very highly rated as a Mercedes junior driver and seems to have slumped a little bit in years past. Be that as it may, while Alonso was on fire, dragged the car into Q3 when Ocon was eliminated in Q1, the car looked not very competitive. Alonso retired around halfway through with a brake overheating issue. But by that time, despite being up amongst, you know, battling with Ricciardo and Sainz, he had fallen back to 12th or 13th, I think, by the time he retired. Ocon never really made it anywhere. He finished 13th. So that doesn't really bode well for that team this year. And I don't imagine that, to speak to an earlier point of yours, I don't think there's any chance of Alonso disappearing this year, because clearly he came back to this team with an eye on 2022 when the big technical changes are coming.
From a health point of view, I have to be totally honest, my father was an oral surgeon. I don't like the idea of someone racing with lots of metal. So, you know, his jaw and various other bits of his face have been rebuilt with titanium. And
this is following a bicycling accident just before the season began.
Absolutely. Switzerland. And I'm absolutely dreading, and I'm sure he is as well, dreading the thought of having a crash which would somehow or another involve bits of these titanium bits. I hope it will never happen. He's a great champion. I don't think the car is particularly good. In all honesty, I cannot see him on the podium in 2021.
We certainly agree on that one. I think the first half of the grid would have to drop out before that becomes a likelihood. You already mentioned the ninth place finisher, AlphaTauri rookie Yuki Tsunoda, who ran an F2 last year. Tsunoda opened a lot of eyes in preseason testing when he set the second fastest time, although we later found out that was because he was opening his DRS something like 3 football fields earlier than anybody else, but you know, that's permitted in testing. And he showed speed again in Q1 when he split Verstappen and Hamilton. That said, he couldn't continue that speed into Q2. He was knocked out, qualified 13th, and that was 8 spots behind his teammate, Pierre Gasly. However, Tsunoda finished 9th when Gasly retired after damaging his car early on. So it was a good, solid weekend for Tsunoda, and it was a disappointing weekend for Gasly. But I think we'll see a lot from both of these guys this year because the car is clearly very quick. And actually, Gasly's pace is fantastic. He seems to be continuing the form that he regained last year at what was then called Toro Rosso after being dumped in favor of Alex Albon at Red Bull one season before that.
Yes, I'm very excited about Tsunoda. And I also predict here and now that there's a gentleman called Zhu who just won, a Chinese driver who just won in Formula 2. And I have a funny feeling that at some stage or another, he'll be in Formula 1 during the season when someone else takes, if you like, an early leave. And I love the idea of a Chinese driver, a Japanese driver, you know, is becoming beautifully international, if I might put it that way.
Yeah, sure. A world championship certainly should be representative in that way. 10th place, final point in the race, went to Aston Martin's Lance Stroll. That was the position that Stroll qualified in, and he actually looks to have, at the moment at least, have the measure of his new teammate, Sebastian Vettel, who was dropped from Ferrari so ignominiously before the season began last year. That said, Aston Martin, which has Mercedes engines and buys as many components as it can from Mercedes, doesn't look like it weathered the small rules changes this year nearly as well as Mercedes did. We said this a little bit last year, that the team seemed to be underperforming, given that it had a pink Mercedes, as it was called. And now that it's a green Mercedes, it doesn't so far seem to be doing any better. And switching to Vettel for a minute, not only was he knocked out in qualifying, in the first round of qualifying, he missed piles of preseason testing time to get familiar with the car due to technical problems with the car. And then he rammed Esteban Ocon during the race. It was just a terrible weekend for him all around. And it's certainly not going to convince anyone who thought he was past his prime at Ferrari that moving to Aston Martin was the right thing to do.
Well, I agree with you 100%. Again, I'm not certain that we'll still be in Formula One at the last race of the season. Wouldn't surprise me at all if he walked away or somebody sort of opened the door and said, go somewhere else, please. He's having tremendous problems getting used to the Mercedes power versus the Ferrari power. And of course, that also, it's a totally different car. He's been in a Ferrari for years, and all of a sudden he has to adjust to all the various knobs and God knows what else. Let's be fair. Let's give him 2 or 3 more races. And if he's still in 18th place, then I think it's, you know, as Ernest Hemingway said, you know, for whom the bell tolls.
Yeah, I agree. It's unfair to judge him after this difficult a start at an all-new season. But by the same token, performing at your best is all about confidence, and there's nothing that's happened so far that's going to improve his confidence as far as I can see. One team that should be confident, though, that was a complete backmarker last year was Alfa Romeo, which looked surprisingly quick in qualifying. They were 12th and 14th, Antonio Giovinazzi leading Kimi Raikkonen, and they finished the race even better, actually, 11th and 12th with Raikkonen ahead.
Absolutely.
That's great news for them. And behind them in 14th place was Williams' George Russell, who once again out-qualified his teammate. He's never been out-qualified by a Williams teammate. And Nicholas Latifi, and beat him in the race as well. And there's further good news for them because I suppose to everybody at that team's delight, they are no longer the slowest team on the grid. And that's a whole other story because that dubious honor now goes to the Ferrari-powered Haas team, which fired Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen at the end of last year, reportedly did almost no development to its car for the new season, and has already announced that it's not going to develop the car at all this year. And on top of that, of course, they have two rookie drivers. Last year's F2 champion, Mick Schumacher, the son, of course, of seven-time world champion Michael, and I believe he was a fifth-place finisher in F2, but a three-time race winner, Nikita Mazepin. Both of them spun during practice for this race. Mazepin, I believe, three times, Schumacher once. Mazepin then spun three corners into the race and crashed out, and Schumacher spun in roughly the same place two or three laps later, but continued on to finish dead last a lap behind. I don't want to go too much into Haas's woes in particular, but it's interesting that George Russell, one of the few guys that has won F2 and F3 in consecutive years and stepped into Formula One, and now Schumacher, who was the F2 champ, they step into F1 in the worst car in the grid. And it's great that there's new blood in the sport, and certainly if you win F2, you deserve, in quotes, a seat in F1. But on the other hand, it's getting a little ridiculous. We saw Russell step into the Mercedes last year and twice very nearly won the only race in it. But now he's back in the Williams, and Schumacher, almost the best he can hope for, barring accidents or other calamities, is finishing 19th ahead of Mazepin. That's kind of a terrible message to send.
Yes, but let's think about his father for a second, who unfortunately is barely alive, but he, I understand, is sitting in front of the TV and he is watching his son. Some people think that that's the only thing that's keeping him alive, and I think that's fantastic.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, and as far as his son is concerned, obviously, this is the difference between Mick and Mazepin and Tsunoda, all three of them, first Formula One race. My new hero, Tsunoda, picked up two championship points in ninth place, and the other two guys were spinning like newcomers. So I find it very exciting. As far as Haas is concerned, look, they don't have the money. They simply don't have the money, and because they're not winning, they're not getting sponsors. McLaren are picking up all the sponsors, and you know they're chasing the same oil companies and every other company and watch companies. And of course, the money always goes to the winners, and it doesn't go to the losers.
That's absolutely true. And part of the reason that Mazepin is in there is because his father is a billionaire who, like Lawrence Stroll, when he bought Williams a wind tunnel in order to get his son a seat at that team, is rumored to be in the running to buy Haas in a few years and essentially do the same thing. So Mazepin is supporting that team, but you're right. They are, as far as I understand it, nowhere near the $150 million budget cap. And they have decided to devote all of their resources to next season, which is, as I mentioned when talking about Ferrari, I think if you're dead last, that only makes sense. But the problem is they fell to dead last. They weren't dead last year. It's one thing to sort of give up on a season and just give it your best. It's another thing to throw up your hands and say, we're not even going to try. And I feel like that's sort of what Haas has done.
Yeah, well, two things I would like to mention, slightly unrelated. One, I loved the way the Aston Martin pace car was leading the field. It looked sensational. And if Mr. Stroll says that he is going to make Aston Martin a success and sell 10,000 cars a year, that, to my mind, was the best possible publicity that I can think of. And the other, which is a little bit of an aside, the Ferrari Club of America's head honcho, money-wise, Paul Flynn, interviewed me the other day, and 300 people have been kind enough to watch it. And to them, thank you very much indeed. I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope all my predictions will come true.
Well, speaking of which, our next race comes up in 3 weeks. It's the, well, I guess it's sort of an Italian Grand Prix. It's the Emilia Romagna Grand Prix at Imola, which returned to the calendar last year after many years away and was a fantastic circuit, if not exactly a nail-biting race. Although now that I say that, that was the race in which Perez spun out of a podium position, correct? And then went on to take his maiden win in the next race. So we have one race down. Do you have any predictions for Imola? I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's going to look almost exactly the same finishing order as it did in Bahrain.
Well, I would predict I agree with you on Hamilton and Verstappen, although not necessarily in that order. I would also predict a new face in third place.
And what face would that be?
Leclerc, I hope.
That's it for this episode of the Forza F1 podcast. One quick programming note. Due to other commitments, we won't be reporting after every race this season, so be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. But we certainly won't miss either Italian Grand Prix, so we'll be back in 3 weeks' time.
Thanks for listening this week. If you like the podcast, check out our website, forzamag.com. That's forza-mag.com, where you can subscribe to our newsletter for the latest Ferrari news and reviews. You can follow us on social media at forzamag, forzamag, no hyphen.